This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Welcome to the Trumpet's weekly review of all the important news. I'm Joel Hilliker, and with me is our panel here in the studio. We have Jeremiah Jacques.
Hi there.
And Andrew Miller.
Hello.
From our office in Britain, we have Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon.
And from our office in Jerusalem, Brent Noctegal.
Hello.
Russia has continued its military buildup near Ukraine, increasing the likelihood of war. The situation has significant implications we'll explore in our first three stories today. First, a look at what Russia has been up to this week. For this, we'll go to Jeremiah.
Yes, Russian President Vladimir Putin has amassed more than 100,000 troops now near Ukraine, and he now has them stretched out on three sides of the country. So he has a major military buildup on Russia's border with Ukraine, but then also to the west in Belarus, where Russia and Belarus are staging war games right now, very near to Ukraine, and then also in Moldova on Ukraine's southwest side. And then Putin, of course, has troops amassed in Crimea, which you could call Russian-occupied Crimea. So Ukraine is really surrounded right now on three sides. And this Russian buildup is a continuation of the buildup that Russia started back in March of last year. But now, Russia not only has the troops spread out on three sides of Ukraine, it also has considerably more aviation reinforcements than before, more naval reinforcements, and more battalion tactical groups. So those are combined arms units made up of motorized rifle, tank, and naval infantry. And then Putin also has multiple launch rocket systems and Iskander M short-range ballistic missile systems as well. One fact that has onlookers particularly alarmed is that Putin now has units from 12 different Russian regions who have traveled across the country to join these troops. So some of these are from Siberia. You know, they've made a very long trip. And some are even from as far away as North Korea, just about 50 miles from the Russia-North Korea border. Units normally stationed there were mobilized, and they're now 5,000 miles away, all the way on the other side of Russia near Ukraine. So highly unusual, actually unprecedented in the modern era. So we're now in a situation where even the most dispassionate analysts are deeply concerned that this is no bluff. You know, it would be terribly bloody and terribly expensive for Russia. But if Putin doesn't get at least the appearance of some kind of major concession from NATO, then it appears he is willing to incur those costs. And it looks like a major invasion could be just weeks away.
Talk about why Putin is so invested in trying to secure Ukraine the way he is.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we've spoken on the show many times about Putin's belief that the worst geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. And Ukraine was arguably the most painful part of that loss for Russia. It was the most populous country in the Union besides Russia. It's got 1,200 miles of border with Russia. And of course, it puts just a crucial buffer between Moscow, the Russian capital, and many of Russia's historic enemies in Europe. But Ukraine has drifted toward the West in recent years. America and its allies have been giving more military aid to it. There's even been quite a lot of talk about Ukraine becoming a part of NATO. So Putin's reason for all of this is to bring just a decisive end to all of that kind of talk and to Ukraine's westward drift. He released a big list of demands a few weeks back that includes an agreement by NATO to never admit Ukraine, and also demands for NATO to pull back troops that are in Eastern Europe, basically bringing them back to where they were in the late 1990s. So surrendering to these demands, it would really neuter NATO, and it would leave Ukraine entirely at the mercy of Putin. And it would trigger the most dramatic change in the world order since the Berlin Wall fell and the Soviet Union collapsed and the Cold War ended. You know, just momentous. But that's exactly the point. Mm-hmm. Putin knows that this is something momentous that he's asking for. And it's hard to know if he expects to get it, these concessions from NATO in part or in whole, or not. But at this point, if he doesn't get at least the appearance of some kind of major concession from NATO, then it's hard to see how this resolves with anything but a military invasion.
So just to look back at the times that Putin has undertaken similar type invasions and incursions into these former Soviet states, what kind of lessons can we learn about what's motivating him, the timing that he might choose to actually make an attack? What's similar to what we've seen in the past and what might be different this time around?
Yeah, well, if you think back to the event that really started this whole dangerous new era for Russia, that was in 2008 when Russia invaded the former Soviet nation of Georgia. And just as that was happening, China was hosting the Olympics in Beijing, the 2008 Summer Games. And it was actually a big blow at the time to Russia-China relations, because China was, you know, just fuming that Russia would do that during this time when the world's attention was supposed to be all on China. China wanted the games to be just this, you know, glorious sign of its rise. But instead, Russia caused this big distraction and drew the eyes of the world away. So here we are now, 14 years later, and the Olympic Games are once again just about to take place in Beijing. This time it's the Winter Games instead. But Russia and China are even closer now, far closer, I think, than they were back in 2008. And so I believe that if Russia does invade Ukraine, it'll wait until sometime after the closing ceremony of those Winter Games, which is February 20th. May not happen that way, but I don't see Russia repeating that offense that it committed to China when all it would have to do is wait just a couple of weeks longer.
So Putin, what he is doing here really does factor into end time events. We've been watching closely his efforts to regain these former Soviet satellite states. And Bible prophecy really does inform us why this is important.
It does, yeah. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury has been warning about Putin's dangerous leadership for several years now, and that is because of Bible prophecy. The scriptures warn of an alliance of several Asian nations that'll come together in the near future. And Mr. Fleury has pointed to Ezekiel 38 to show that this alliance will be led by one Russian man. Verse 2 of that chapter calls this man the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. And Mr. Fleury has identified Putin as that individual. Those names, he said, they denote Russia and then two of its major cities, Moscow in the west and Tobolsk more toward the eastern part of the country. And in Mr. Fleury's booklet called The Prophesied Prince of Russia, he writes about the significance of those three names. He says, "The use of all three names shows that this is an individual ruler of all the peoples of Russia from the west to the east. The reference to the cities of Moscow and Tobolsk helps us see how vast Russian territory is in these latter days. The giant swath of land indicates that the prince of Russia will probably conquer more nations of the former Soviet Union." End quote. So, you know, this shows how important it is for us to watch Putin very closely as he keeps on asserting more control over Russia and its periphery, and especially the former Soviet nations like Ukraine.
Where would you send people for more understanding of that prophecy?
I would send them to that very booklet that I just mentioned there. It's called The Prophesied Prince of Russia. And if anyone would like to better understand the events that are now happening in Eastern Europe in that prophetic context, that booklet does an excellent job of just illuminating all of it.
All right. Thank you, Jeremiah. In a press briefing on Wednesday, U.S. President Joe Biden might have accidentally told the truth about just how unlikely it is that America will intervene in the event of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. For this, we'll turn to Andrew Miller.
Yeah, a Russian invasion of Ukraine would just be a huge geopolitical development. And many people around the world are obviously wondering what's the United States going to do if that happens. And so on a actually rather disastrous press conference that Biden gave on Wednesday, about 28 minutes into it, he did respond to those concerns, where he said that Russia will be held accountable if it invades. And it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor invasion and NATO ends up having to fight about what to do about it, et cetera, et cetera. But if they actually do what they're capable of doing, it's going to be a disaster for Russia if they further invade Ukraine. And so it's kind of a vague statement. So one of the journalists helpfully piped up and asked him, he's like, "Well, are you actually giving Russia permission to do a minor invasion of Ukraine?" To which Biden just laughed and he's like, "Well, yeah, it actually does sound like that, doesn't it?" And moved on, which is pretty shocking. I think a lot of people in Ukraine were upset. Yeah. The prime minister of Ukraine made some comments.
To put it mildly.
Made some comments showing how concerned he is, where they're not exactly sure what a minor invasion means, but like I said, he basically gave them permission to do a minor invasion of Ukraine. Just don't get too carried away with it, which is shocking for one, because, I mean, if you'll remember not too long ago, President Donald Trump was actually impeached for making a statement during a phone call that could be misconstrued as America's going to stop supporting Ukraine or stop selling weapons to Ukraine. And now Biden's come out and not only made a statement much, much worse than that, saying that, like, hey, if Russia invades, like I said, America is not going to do anything as long as it's a minor invasion. Mm-hmm. Also led a number of people, including the editorial team at the Telegraph in Britain, to suspect, probably rightly, that there's some sort of deal between the Biden administration and Russia. In the fact that it wasn't that long ago, just this summer in July, where, if you'll remember again, President Trump had sanctioned the Nord Stream pipeline, saying that it made Germany too dependent on Russia. Biden reversed that. And in July, he said that, like, no, America supports the Nord Stream pipeline. We're going to let it go through. But we want the Germany to, like, pinky promise that if we let them have all this Russian oil, they'll use their political clout to stop Russia from weaponizing energy against the Eastern European nations. So we're saying that if Germany wants its pipeline, you can have your pipeline, but it's on you guys to protect Eastern Europe. And so now with this new gaffe, or maybe accidentally telling the truth, shows that, like I said, that deal doesn't seem, the terms of the deal seem to have been altered, where you're like, okay, Germany gets its pipeline and Russia can invade Donbass if it wants to, just don't go much further than that. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's still unknown exactly what the U.S. gets out of this deal, other than the opportunity to continue doing business investment with German industrialists. But it does definitely bring to mind that point we've made up so many times in this program about this isn't chaos, this isn't incompetence, this is treason. Mm-hmm. In the fact that, I mean, President Trump knew all about this and had a really good plan to keep Germany from becoming too reliant on Russia and defending Eastern Europe. The Biden administration has deliberately sabotaged all that, given Russia everything it wants, while at the same time claiming that President Trump was a Russian stooge somehow. Just a really weird story, but it definitely does bring to the points that our editor-in-chief has made so many times about, like I said, this is just the Biden administration or the Obama administration that sits behind it. It is really doing everything it can to bring America down.
Well, that does transition nicely into our next segment. We will link to that our article, This Isn't Incompetence, This is Treason, in our show notes for today's program. We thank you for that, Andrew. The evidence of collusion with Russia is even thicker when you look at what Germany is doing in light of these events in Ukraine. For this, we'll go to Richard Palmer.
Yes, Jeremiah mentioned the arrangement or the deal that Russia is pushing. And he talked about how it would have massive implications if America were to agree to it. It would essentially push America out of Europe. It would destroy NATO. And what is becoming increasingly obvious, especially over the last week, is that Germany wants that too. That over this conflict with Ukraine, Germany is acting completely out of step with NATO in a way that does seriously undermine the alliance. I think the most obvious and visible manifestation of this week came as Britain started flying weapons in to Ukraine and soldiers to go with and train Ukrainian forces on how to use these weapons. And you can look at maps of the flight plan, and they had to fly around Germany. It would have been much more direct to go through Germany. They made this detour around the airspace of a NATO ally, who's somebody who they should have a very close military alliance with. And as news of that got out, both sides kind of put out statements saying, well, no, nothing to see here. Britain just kind of said, oh, it was just too much paperwork to go through Germany. which, I mean, it was too much paperwork to go through Germany. Why is that any different from them having to do this detour that takes you through Denmark and the Baltic that's longer and takes you through other countries? You know, it doesn't really, it was a cop-out. They were obviously avoiding German airspace with these weapons. But I've just seen a deluge of headlines this week from people starting to wake up to this and maybe not fully realizing, okay, Germany's trying to punish NATO, but certainly realizing, you know, they're not on our side here. They've got their Nord Stream 2 pipeline deal that they're doing with Germany, that with Russia, that's empowering Russia. And they're actively working against the United States and against these other countries that are in theory trying to help Ukraine and oppose Russia. I think another example of this is the way that they've constantly tried to take punishments off the table. So when President or Mr. Biden isn't kind of making these just bizarre comments, some of his officials at least will put out and say, well, if Russia invades Ukraine, we'll do this or we'll do that. And Germany is right there immediately saying, well, no, let's not go that far. You know, undermining all of these threats. I mean, one of the big ones, for example, is the United States has talked about cutting Russia off from the SWIFT international banking system. You know, basically just cutting Russia off of the entire system of modern finance. There's an interesting debate to be had, I think, as to how effective that would be, given that Russia has been threatened with this for many years and has had time to put their own alternatives in place. But even so, right off the bat, as soon as that suggestion is made, Germany's out there saying, no, let's not do that. That's too harsh. That's a financial nuclear option. We better not go there. So, well, and then also just coming from this last week or so, Ukraine's deputy prime minister gave an interview to Spiegel, Europe's biggest circulation magazine. And it's pretty much and certainly Germany's biggest magazine, huge news source. It's pretty much a direct appeal to Germany. And she's complaining about how Germany's just repeatedly blocked NATO from giving more armaments to Ukraine and blocked the transfers of certain types of armaments to Ukraine. And just talking about how Germany is undermining what they've been trying to do at just about every step. She said, so far Germany's blocked the procurement of certain defense weapons. So repeat it again and again in all these different examples, Germany has shown itself to be on a different page and even a different side to the rest of NATO.
Mm-hmm. Quite a stunning development. And we've talked a lot about the relationship between Germany and Russia being something of a portent of war, that when you see those two colluding, if you look at history, you see problems that result from that when they're turning to each other and trying to shore up relations with one another. It enables them to then direct their focus elsewhere. And it tends to lead to serious problems. This is something that we actually have quite a lot of information about. This, an article that you and Josue Michels put together for the print edition of The Trumpet that we just sent to the printer yesterday. Complimenting a major article from our editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury, about the rise of German industry and the relationship that German industry has with Russia. We've seen that develop with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Donald Trump actually stood up to Germany in a lot of ways. Joe Biden is doing exactly the opposite, and he just seems to be somewhat... exactly what is motivating him is a little bit hard to discern, but the effect is that he's giving a green light to this relationship between Germany and Russia that is proving to be a major problem for Eastern Europe and for many other nations as well.
That's right. I mean, Andrew addressed some of this when he talked about that pipeline deal the way that President Trump had effectively stopped that pipeline deal and Joe Biden took the brakes off. Politico had a really good article this week where they talked about this shifting relationship called Germany's Pivot from America. And they talked about some of this. And one of the points that they made is just the way is how far even President Biden or Mr. Biden has gone out of his way to put pro-Germans in key positions. You know, the Assistant Secretary of State for Europe, Karin Donfried, is the former president of the German Marshall Fund of the United States, a think tank started by the German government. So he's trying to do everything to, if you're charitable, I guess, to kind of coax Germany back to NATO. But you know, that quite clearly that policy didn't work in all the years that we've seen that happening before. I think it's interesting that Mr. Obama had this kind of very close relationship with Angela Merkel as well, where he kind of talked about her as being Germany's best friend and America's best friend and closest ally. So I think that relationship is kind of interesting to see this this shift from basically the third Biden term in office. But then you're right, this is causing a lot of problems for Europe. And I think it's interesting because it's causing problems in Europe in a way that causes Europe to look to Germany more. It kind of even these problems in Europe help Germany. You know, if you're Poland, you would very much rather have the United States defend you from Russia than Germany defending you from Russia. You know, there's no massive history of the United States invading Poland, which is not something that we can say for Germany. But if America makes very clear that they're not going to do anything and they're going to sit on their hands, right. I think for Poland, looking at the situation right now, they would rather have German help than no help.
Right.
And really, that's what the option is looking like. And so you can see how the more America steps back from Europe, the more Europe looks to Germany. And so that's absolutely what is behind Germany's actions here. It's NATO weakens and Europe has to look to itself and its own resources. Well, then Europe's biggest economy and most populous country really starts to come to the fore and comes to the head of this emerging European now potential military alliance.
Yeah, all of these discussions that have been taking place about NATO's future and just how much the geopolitical situation has changed since NATO was formed and what is its role in politics going forward. In a way, Germany is casting its vote. It's saying just by the way that it's handling itself in its foreign policy, it's showing exactly what it thinks of NATO, regardless of whether it's resolved in official discussion and negotiation. Its future is away from the United States. And as much as the Biden administration may be trying to pretend like there's still a relationship there or trying to court Germany or, you know, throw in more inducements to Germany, Germany is making its position very well known. So where would you send people for more information about just understanding the prophetic implications of what's going on here?
So Germany and Russia's secret war against America is something that the Trump editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, wrote back in 2018. And that's something that's available right now that you can look at on our website. And that just really exposes the way even back then Germany was working to undermine NATO. I mean, he talks about how Donald Trump called them out on that. But so much of that article is bang up to date, even though President Trump has moved on. It talks about why this Nord Stream pipeline is so important, this one that we've been talking about a lot. And it gets into that relationship, what it means in Bible prophecy, and really just zooms in on this exposes Germany's attitude. This exposes this deepening resentment within Germany and their desire now to switch sides. And to work to bring down the United States. And we have more articles coming up on this subject in the next Trumpet print. And I'd certainly encourage you to look out for those that kind of bring this up to date. But this article really, that article that we have right now, though, Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America, puts it all in biblical perspective, helps us understand these prophecies and puts them in context of just the wider, you know, end time prophecies and exactly the great hope that this is leading to as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Richard. We'll move on now. A drone attack in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates could mark a dangerous turning point for the Middle East. For this, we'll turn to Brent Noctegal.
Yes, this took place on Monday, and it is a really dramatic turn of events in the Middle East, particularly for the UAE and the Iranians' use of the Houthis, the Yemeni terrorist organization. They would say freedom fighters trying to, ever since 2015, they took over the capital there, or end of 2014 in Yemen. And they've really been waging a war against the legitimate government of Yemen for some time. And the UAE and Saudis have been joining together and fighting against this and what they see as a dangerous Iranian incursion into the southern border of Saudi Arabia and to really a very important strategic waterway as well, which we talk about quite a lot, the southern passage of the Red Sea. And so just this past week, we saw a very significant change in both strategy and demonstration of ability of the Houthis. There were three people killed in Abu Dhabi. This was caused by, or at least the Iranians say that this was caused by five ballistic missiles and cruise missiles. At least they were fired, as well as a very large number of drones, weaponized drones, that were headed to the UAE. And particularly the area that was targeted in the UAE is a very important area where a lot of foreign companies are invested, a lot of oil companies are invested there, a lot of high-tech companies are invested in this area as well. Three people again were killed by, it looks like, the drone part of this attack. There also looks like the Abu Dhabi airport was attacked as well. Now, the Emirati government would like to downplay this and not want to bring it up, because this tourism is an absolute major area of economic windfall for the Emiratis. And so they can't have one of their main airports coming under fire by the Houthis. Now, just think about how far Yemen is from Abu Dhabi. I think it's about 1,000 miles. I have the exact distance here. Yeah, it's 869 miles. That's the distance that these drones were likely flown, 1400 kilometers. That's a first. They've never flown drones this far. They've flown them 600 or 700 kilometers before, but never this far. And yet they were able, it seems, to evade much of the defensive systems that are in place there and strike at really close to the heart of the UAE's economic system. And so it does show just a great ability of the Houthis. Again, these are an Iranian-backed group. This would not have happened without Iran's go-ahead, and it's striking right at the heart of, again, the UAE.
Why would the Houthis and the Iranians be interested in targeting the United Arab Emirates, and why now?
The UAE has been, as I said, fighting in the war against the Houthis for some time. However, since 2019, they've really seemed to have drawn down some of their support for the Saudi-led war. However, over the past couple of weeks, they have dramatically increased their fighting in southern Yemen against the Houthis, causing the Houthis one of the major setbacks in a battle that they haven't seen in years. And so this is seen as a sign by the Houthis that, hey, just watch out. We can target you. We can hit you right where we want to. We have the ability to do so. And so, I mean, what the Iranians are saying about it through Tasnim, which is an IRGC affiliated news source, is that they really expect the UAE to take notice that this is the first attack of many if they don't start drawing down their fighting against the Houthis in southern Yemen. Now, there is the major battle taking place right now is in northern Yemen for the Marib region, which is the oil-rich sector. And this is still held onto by the Saudi-backed government. And the Houthis have been losing a lot of fighters there. And so with the UAE fighting against the Houthis in southern Yemen, it's really drawing forces that cannot be used by the Houthis in this major offensive. And this Marib region is bordering northeastern part of Yemen, so southern Saudi Arabia. It's very critical for Saudi Arabia. And so again, this is everything about Yemen. This is what it's about. It's not about the UAE necessarily of the Houthis wanting to pick a fight. This is them saying, back out or we will come after you and we have the ability to do so. To me, it really does show how much investment and how much stock that the Iranians have put in the Houthi takeover of Yemen. They're not willing to give up on it. To the point that they're going to strike right at this is like an attack. I mean, there's so many Westerners there. One of the great trumpet followers that we have that lives in the UAE, he was 15 minutes away from where he, I think he lives or he works. So this is really close. This is right where the foreigners are. And so the UAE will be taking notice. However, I don't know if that'll stop them fighting in Yemen. But again, it shows how much power Iran has to direct such an attack, and that the Houthis have ballistic missiles now, massive cruise missiles, these drones. It's not far that these drones could be hitting southern Israel from the Houthis now. So this is not your ragtag bunch of terrorists that have taken over over Yemen. This is a supreme or a very fierce fighting force with high-tech weaponry, and they turn their sights on to this Gulf nation.
So just remind our listeners why Iran is so invested in this presence that it has in the nation of Yemen.
I think the main reason, and this is based on biblical prophecy, is that Yemen borders the Red Sea passageway. And of course, Iran is trying to destabilize the whole region in its benefit. However, there is a strategy to its plan, and Bible prophecy reveals that its strategy involves controlling the waterways all the way from the Persian Gulf to the Mediterranean to really put under threat global trade through this critical choke point, or choke points, I should say. And so the Bab el-Mandab, I think it's 22 miles across. This is the Gate of Tears at the southern entrance of the Red Sea that the Houthis pretty much control right now. Just last week, a UAE vessel was taken by the Houthis, seized by the Houthis directly before, as like a warning before this attack. And again, this shows what the Iranians can do in this area where so much of world trade passes through. And so if they can control the trade that goes through there or make it incredibly dangerous for commercial shipping to go through here, then they can hold to ransom a lot of this trade that's going between, particularly between China and Europe, goes through this area. I think $800 billion a year of trade sales through here between China or Southeast Asia and Europe. And if the Houthis can start really clamping down on that, that gives them a great leverage for the future. And biblical prophecy and prophecies found in Daniel 11, verse 40 to 43, talk about them, the Iranians, the king of the south, as their known biblical prophecy, controlling these territories. So again, Iran is committed to controlling the Red Sea passageway, and its support for the Houthis is very much evident of that. People can read Iran gets a stranglehold on the Middle East, and that's written by our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Flurry, to understand those prophecies.
Well, thank you very much for that, Brent. We will link to that article in the show notes. You're listening to Trumpet Hour. Coming up, Israel ordering submarines from a German company, naval drills between Russia, China, and Iran, and more. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Trumpet Hour, the Week in Review.
We spoke in the first half of how Poland and Eastern European nations are turning to Germany as America withdraws. The same story, in a sense, is playing out in the Middle Eastern nation of Israel. This was evident in a defense agreement the nation made this week. For this, we'll go back to Richard Palmer.
Yes, this week a 3 billion euro or 3.4 billion US dollar deal for Germany to manufacture three new diesel submarines for the Israeli Navy was announced. So ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems will be building these submarines. It's been in the works for some time. It's been rumored for quite a while, so I don't think it's necessarily a surprise, but it's still certainly news. They're going to be Dakar submarines. They'll be delivered within 9 years. Israel already has five German Dolphin class submarines. There's another one that's being built, and these are going to replace some of the Dolphin submarines as they age. And this is just a massive level of trust between Israel and Germany. I think it is hard to overstate how much it is. This is not just your typical arms deal, because the generally understood rumor is that these Dolphin-class submarines carry Israel's nuclear weapons. Now, of course, Israel doesn't admit that they have nuclear weapons. Everyone knows that they do. And so, you know, these submarines are a key part of Operation Samson, that if Israel is ever wiped out by a nuclear attack, these submarines will presumably survive and visit nuclear retribution on whomever Iran launched that nuclear attack. So they're entrusting these nuclear weapons. They're going to go on these German-built built submarines, which I mean, you look at this company, ThyssenKrupp, or ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems. I guess the whole Krupp company is devolved into quite a few different companies. I think one of the things that most readily comes to mind is their history with Nazi Germany, gas chambers, the Holocaust, slave labor, all of this kind of thing. So it really is remarkable to show Israel trusting and working with Germany at this level.
Let's just talk about Bible prophecy and the fact that we have talked about and expected this relationship to grow between Israel and Germany. And as we see America's commitment to Israel very compromised right now, obviously under the Biden administration, Israel turning to other allies for support, this relationship between Israel and Germany has been developing for some time, but the trust that you're talking about, it really is something that Bible prophecy informs us. There's a real danger here.
That's right. I mean, this whole turning to Germany, we mentioned it in the first half, talking about Europe as America retreats, Europe turns to Germany. Like you said in the introduction, this is the same trend in Israel. You're seeing the same trend across the Middle East. There was an article this week just talking about how Saudi Arabia and its allies are kind of frantically trying to court China because they see America pulling out and they're desperate for someone else to come in and fill that vacuum. And they're going to turn to Germany and look to Germany to fulfill that role as well. So this is something that's happening worldwide as America steps back. But you're right, this kind of turn of events is absolutely prophesied. And the Bible has some very specific prophecies about this. In a lot of ways, it ties into what we were talking about in the first half, where Israel in the Middle East, the United States, Britain as well, these are all descendants of the biblical nations of Israel. And Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong proves that in his free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. And we're happy to send you that book for free. And so if you haven't read that, but these are Israel. And the Bible talks about Germany betraying modern Israel trusting Germany and then being, being stabbed in the back. And you see that happening already with what's going on in NATO and Europe and Germany turning on America. And the Bible says that you're going to see this in the Middle East as well. And so there's very specific prophecies. Hosea chapter 5, for example, talks about Israel's peace process as being a wound. And that as Israel wakes up to this fact, they will turn to Germany. There's other prophecies. I think just from memory, is it Ezekiel 23, somewhere right around there, has a similar prophecy about modern Israel treating Germany as a lover, a whole lot of trust and intimacy in that relationship and it being betrayed. And so you see some of these companies, ThyssenKrupp, we have an article in the upcoming Trumpet Print that talks about some of these companies and the influence they had with Nazi Germany. They're being trusted. Germany's being trusted again. But the Bible makes very clear that they're going to be betrayed.
Well, we do have an article by Josue Michels that is directly addressing this submarine deal that Israel is making with Germany. You can watch for that on thetrumpet.com next week. In the meantime, we'll link to an older article, Did Israel Do a Deal with the Devil for a Nuclear Bomb, that discusses this relationship that is so prophetically significant. Thank you very much for that, Richard. Russia and China are accustomed to doing military maneuvers together, but now they're inviting a third party into some naval drills in the Indian Ocean. For this, we'll go back to Brent Noctegal.
Yes, these naval drills took place in the northern parts of the Indian Ocean, just outside the Persian Gulf. So that might give you an idea of the third nation, that being the nation of Iran. So beginning on Friday, these naval drills took place with 11 of Iran's vessels, 3 Russian ships, including a destroyer and 2 Chinese vessels. These are actually the third such drills between these powers, but they come amid just an incredibly heightened heightened situation, security situation in the region. And really, Iran is really touting these drills as being very important for its image and its military cooperation. Now, just this week on Thursday, Ibrahim Raisi, the president, the really crazy hardline president of Iran, the one that's been as close to the Revolutionary Guards, as close to the Ayatollah as anyone previously, he was meeting with Putin personally up in Moscow, and then he has declared that they are drafting some type of military strategic partnership that should last the next 20 years. And then the next day they begin these drills that seem to be somewhat serious. It's a large swath of ocean that they're working together on in, and they're meant to last for a few days, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, this is just it's really fascinating to watch how the Russians and the Chinese, obviously they're the main strategic partners for each other. But here you have them exploring ways to getting further involved in the Middle East. And both nations, Russia and China, individually have been really reaching out to the Iranians. Iran is in need of a lot of money. The Chinese have got some massive infrastructure deal with the Iranians that supposedly have been penned. And now you've got them cozying up to Russia as well. And so both these nations, we have to look at these nations as being opportunists. And they don't necessarily like the Iranians, but who's going to ally with Russia and China in the Middle East? It's not going to be the Gulf states. They're firmly in the United States and even Israel camp, and they don't really have too many choices outside the Iranians. And the Iranians are willing and very needful for Russian hardware and Chinese dollars. So it makes sense for the Iranians to get closer to these two parties as well.
And I guess, too, Iran has been shut out of some Western markets, and it seems that China, you talk about them being opportunists, and Russia, they don't seem to have any problem with the fact that Iran is a terrorist-sponsoring nation, that it's pursuing nuclear weapons. They're perfectly comfortable with working with such a power.
Yeah, and I think biblical prophecy even shows this as well, that the way that prophecy lays out, even the way that the Great Tribulation will begin and the way it'll progress and the way that alliances shift within that war, where sometimes these nations are allied together and then they eventually split apart. That's what we see here. At the outset, it's in Russian and Chinese interests to favor the Iranians, to give the Iranians the weapons that they need, because the number one enemy of the Iranians is also the number one enemy of the Russians and the Chinese. And so they recognize that they're not going to be on the receiving end. You can't see the Iranians aiming a nuclear weapon at Moscow or Beijing. They'll be right down the bottom, because they recognize that the Russians and the Chinese, they wouldn't mess around. And so it makes sense if Russia and China wants to pressure the United States or Israel or even Europe, what are they going to do? Well, let's empower the adversary, the fanatical adversary of the United States, Israel, and Europe, and even the Gulf states as well. And that it means empowering Iran.
This isn't a relationship that's directly described in biblical prophecy.
No, it's not. But you do have prophecies that talk about, and particularly in Psalm 83, that there is going to be an alliance that is against the Iranians, or at least formed in part against Iranian aggression in the Middle East. And that is the Gulf states and European nations coming together, and Europe being led by Germany. And so you can see that when Russia, China, and Iran get together, who's going to be spooked into a closer relationship, a closer defense pact? It would be those Psalm 83 nations. And so Bible prophecy does say that those nations that are probably on the receiving end of Iran's aggression, they are going to band together. And in a way, we might be seeing that. It's kind of like a parallel of what's happening in Eastern Europe when you see what's going on there with Russian aggression, and perhaps that's going to make Europe band together. And Russian aggression or Iranian aggression, Russian-backed Iranian aggression in the Middle East will push these other allies together as well, such as the Sunni states going over to the camp of the Europeans. If people want to read up on this, they can read our trend article on this SAM 83 alliance. It's entitled Why the Trumpet Watches an Alliance Between Arab Nations and Europe.
Thank you very much for that, Brent. Speaking of China and its naval capabilities, China continues to expand in this critical military arena. For this story, we'll go back to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, the Belt and Road Initiative is very often discussed by China watchers, and it's become a well-known pillar of China's foreign policy. But what is not nearly as well-known is just how far from China's territory the Communist Party's ambitions are taking it, and this is mainly with naval bases and a massive expansion of global naval power. So in the last few years, China's Navy has expanded into the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. There's also the story that we've recently discussed with China moving into Equatorial Guinea in West Africa, with, you know, plans to convert a major port there into a Chinese naval base. That location is expected to soon be allowing Chinese military vessels to repair, rearm, and refit. So just a major development there. And then American intelligence has recently reported to Congress that China may also already be in the early phases of base building with Kenya, the Seychelles, Angola, and Tanzania. So the list is lengthening. And then on the other side of the Atlantic, in the Caribbean, China is investing hundreds of millions of dollars into Jamaica, Barbados, and Trinidad. And it's establishing military-to-military relations with these nations with a focus on naval ties. So when you put all of this together, it shows that China has entered a blue water naval phase. It's well past being able to just dominate its own coastal waters, and its navy is now projecting power internationally in all these different far-flung locations. So it's a major development showing that China's power, including its naval power, is growing at a pace faster than just about anyone expected.
What is China going to do with this power?
Yeah, there was an analysis about this in the Washington Times this week. It was written by Dr. Lamont Colucci, a diplomat with the State Department. And he put it in what I think were some really stark terms. He wrote, "China's predatory acts, illustrating the naked ambition to gain world hegemony, are a precursor of further destabilizing behavior and an attack on American vital and national interests." And then he writes, "America is again at a crossroads of decision-making. A choice of weakness will result in generational disaster." End quote. So it's, you know, I think it's hard to state it any more plainly than that. The Chinese Communist Party wants world hegemony. It is determined to be the main global power and to just remake the world in its image. So you can see what Dr. Colucci means when he says that if the U.S. allows China to keep growing its blue water naval power and to just keep expanding around the world, it could result in generational disaster.
Where would you send people for more information, Jeremiah?
Well, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flory wrote an article in the August 2020 issue of the Philadelphia Trumpet. It's called "Where is the China-America Clash Leading?" And he first shines a spotlight on all of China's dangerous, you know, naval power and its domineering in various parts of the world. And then he places it all in the context of Bible prophecy. So that article there, I think, will help any listeners to just understand this in that context.
All right. We'll link to that in the show notes for the program today. Thank you for that, Jeremiah. We'll finish with the latest news from America's southern border. It's been exactly a year since the Biden administration took over, and under its watch, a record number of illegal immigrants are streaming into the country. For this story, we'll turn to Andrew Miller.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yesterday marked 365 days of Biden's time in the White House. And that's one of the reasons he gave that press conference on Wednesday we talked about in the first half of the show. But surprisingly, one of the things he didn't mention at all in that press conference is immigration. And actually, maybe that's not surprisingly, because in his year in office, his approval ratings are now lower than ever. But the opinion polls show that the one thing that Biden's done that the American people disapprove of more than any other is how he's handling the border crisis. 1.7 million people were apprehended by border control agents during fiscal year 2021. That's more than ever before in American history. And President Trump was actually still president for the first few months of fiscal year 2021. If you actually look, they're still waiting for the latest statistics to come out. But it looks like if you actually look at the year that Biden's been in office, those 365 days, it's actually been 2 million illegal immigrants crossed over the border. That's if all of them lived in one place, it would be the fifth biggest city in America. It's about 5,500 a day almost. So just really almost inconceivable numbers of immigrants pouring over the border that the Biden administration has done nothing to stop and even some things to encourage. I think a few months back, I talked about a news story that Tucker Carlson broke about the Biden administration actually sending military planes to the southern border to round up some of these immigrants and then fly them not back to Guatemala, but further into the United States. And there's a similar story broke this week. I think that the Daily Mail broke it, but they found that the TSA, the Transportation Security Agency, is now actually accepting arrest warrants as identification for illegal immigrants to get on planes. Like, I don't have a driver's license. I don't have a passport. I don't have a social security number. But don't worry, I'm not some terrorist from the Middle East. Here's my arrest warrant proving that I came from Guatemala.
You didn't read this on the Babylon Bee.
No, and they haven't even parodied it yet. They need to get on that. But it's but yeah, just shocking the extent they've taken to bring more illegals into the country. And definitely something that's prophesied. The article we can put in the show notes from editor-in-chief, Where America's Race Riots Are Leading. This was back from 2014, but he focuses quite a bit on there about this prophecy in Deuteronomy 28 verses 52 about one of the curses that come on the descendants of end-time Israel for disobedience. Is your high and defensed walls come down, or basically your border security comes down. And when the border security comes down, that allows immigrants to flood into the border. This is a quote from that article. It says, "Do you realize that the immigration problem befalling America right now is actually prophesied here in Deuteronomy? The influx of more and more races into the United States will only worsen the siege prophesied in Ezekiel." And that was written, I think, 2014, so about halfway through Barack Obama's second term, when the migrant crisis was a fraction of what it is today. I mean, back then it was getting worse, but it wasn't nearly as bad as it was under George Bush. And now under Biden, it's gotten worse than it was under Bush and worse than it's actually ever been in American history, just the sheer number of people unvetted, some of them working for drug cartels, some of them working for Hezbollah, some of them just being poor, desperate refugees who are willing to commit crimes or do whatever they need to make a living once they get here, living in a country where they're not legally allowed. Mm-hmm. It's just a tragic situation.
But certainly is a curse, as Deuteronomy 28 brings out, and it's the fact that the authorities are permitting it to happen. It shows there's a leadership curse in the United States as well. They are compounding on one another. We thank you for bringing that to us, Andrew. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. Email us your thoughts on the program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to our panel, Jeremiah Jacques, Andrew Miller, Richard Palmer, and Brent Noctegal. Thanks to Parker Campbell for engineering and production. I'll leave you with the words of Oliver Wendell Holmes. We need education in the obvious more than investigation of the obscure. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.